Welcome to Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. We are less than 2 weeks away from the election. Michigan is poised to select a new governor, re-elect or replace incumbents in Washington and Lansing, and vote on many propositions. On this program, we'll help you with your homework and help you get to know a few of the candidates and issues better. In just over 2 weeks, recreational use of marijuana could be legal in Michigan. Then what happens? Lisa Berry from our fellow Michigan NPR member station, WEMU, explores the possible impact on local communities, law enforcement, and tourism should the adult personal use of marijuana be legalized by Michigan voters.
I met longtime cannabis, as he prefers to call it, advocate Jamie Lowell at an Ypsilanti restaurant to discuss the impact of marijuana use for personal consumption and to get a feel for how it might change the local landscape if it is approved. To my surprise, Lowell says he thinks the impact will be minimal.
Very little will noticeably change after the passage of this act, except for many of us will feel relieved that we don't have to look over our shoulder as much.
He adds he doesn't believe legalizing marijuana for adult personal use, as he prefers to call it, will prompt a big rush to buy and use it.
It's already here, and it's already being used probably almost by the same amount of people who are going to be using it after legalization, and it kind of just transitions how it works more than anything else.
If the proposal is approved and the Michigan law changes, residents would be able to possess up to 2.5 ounces of marijuana and 15 grams of marijuana concentrate. You can also keep 10 ounces at home, where you can grow up to 12 plants for personal use and can give up to 2.5 ounces as a gift. Lowell, who has a stake in an Ypsilanti medical marijuana dispensary, says the excise tax for medical marijuana goes away under this proposal, and he says will make it more affordable for patients, adding that Michigan is going to be charging a very low tax rate, in his opinion, and says high taxes make it difficult to convert people from the black market to the regulated marijuana sale market.
Right off of the bat, in Michigan, we're starting off with only a 10% excise tax. That will generate a fair amount of revenue. There's just an economic impact study that came out, and by 2024 we should regularly be seeing well over $100 million and growing coming into Michigan to use for roads and schools and other things.
In fact, the Michigan Senate Fiscal Agency just released a fiscal analysis of Proposal 1, estimating that legalization could generate nearly $288 million in 2023 in tax revenue. The group Healthy and Productive Michigan is leading the campaign in opposition to the ballot initiative, run by the former vice chairman of the Michigan Republican Party, Scott Greenlee. The group is sending frequent emails to the media in recent weeks, citing the many organizations that oppose the legalization, including a list of more than 50 Michigan prosecutors, which does not include the Washtenaw County prosecutor, and most recently a list of 58 Michigan County sheriffs opposing Proposal 1, again, the Washtenaw County sheriff not on that list. They're also sending audio clips from a variety of opponents to the proposal, including this warning from Greenlee himself.
Unlike alcohol, marijuana stays in a person's body for 15, 20, 25 days. So if somebody goes out and has a couple beers and watches a baseball game, and they get to bed, they get up the next morning, they use the restroom, they have a bottle of water, it's completely out of their system. If somebody chooses to do recreational marijuana on, let's just say, July 1, and they're randomly drug tested on July 20, it will likely still be in their system, and they likely will then lose their job.
The largest employer in Washtenaw County is the University of Michigan. No changes are expected there should recreational marijuana use be approved. According to spokesman Rick Fitzgerald, university officials believe they are already covered by their current policy on alcohol and drug use in the workplace. But what will be the impact on local communities? Ann Arbor Mayor Christopher Taylor says the city has been mostly focusing on medical marijuana dispensaries and really hasn't made any preparations should recreational use become legal.
Ann Arbor was one of the leaders in decriminalizing cannabis when we instituted the $5 civil fine. I would expect, you know, if marijuana were legalized in Michigan, that there would be recreational marijuana in Ann Arbor, and I would expect, you know, the introduction of that would advance some changes. The nature of those changes, I think, are yet to be determined.
And on the county level, Andy LaBarre wears two hats as chairman of the Washtenaw County Commission and executive vice president of the Ann Arbor Ypsilanti Regional Chamber. He says the commission plans to discuss the possible impact at the end of this month and adds local businesses are trying to determine what this might mean.
There'll be some sort of learning as we go in terms of how you integrate what the voters approve to HR practices with businesses and frankly, the revenue equation, how that impacts the state budget.
Local law enforcement is not anticipating a big impact either. Brian Webb is a drug recognition expert for the Washtenaw County Sheriff's Department. He says he's already pulling drivers over for suspected marijuana use while behind the wheel and expects that to continue should it be legalized.
If I suspect that they're under influence of something besides alcohol, you know, we confirm it with a preliminary breath test. And if I suspect they're under the influence of something other than alcohol, then we're going to go through standardized field sobriety testing. And then I'm going to do a 12-step evaluation called a drug recognition expert evaluation that I would do.
Deputy Webb says they are watching to see what happens and making necessary preparations.
You still can't drive under the influence of it. That's, you know, very clear. You can have possession of it, you know, so much of an ounce and be over 21, but you can't be under the influence of it and affecting your ability to drive a motor vehicle.
If voters approve the recreational use of marijuana next month, Michigan would become the 10th state in the country where it's legal and the first in the Midwest. While it may seem local government and law enforcement is taking a wait-and-see attitude about legalized marijuana use, one student at the University of Michigan has been proactive. Adam Rosenberg is a senior at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business, founder of Green Wolverine, the nation's first student organization focused on the cannabis industry, with chapters in Michigan, California, and Maryland. There are 200 members at U of M, and Rosenberg says they're not taking a position on recreational use, but are aware of the stigma of personal cannabis use.
The stigma is derived from decades of propaganda, from Reefer Madness, which portrays the typical stoner as someone who is lazy, someone who is not a contributing member of society.
Rosenberg says recreational use of marijuana is already pretty prevalent on the Ann Arbor campus.
It's no secret that college students partake in cannabis use. The University of Michigan has a unique cannabis culture stemming from decades of acceptance and decriminalization in Ann Arbor.
He says U of M and the Ross School of Business have been supportive of his efforts, which he intends to follow through on as a career once he graduates. Rosenberg recently organized a cannabis science symposium with funding from the University College of Pharmacy and the Ross School of Business, collaborating with the U of M School of Nursing. Rosenberg acknowledges there are downsides to marijuana use, but still believes there are big business opportunities in the future should it be legalized.
There's no doubt that there are downsides to the use of cannabis. Cannabis use disorder is a real condition. However, it is proven to be far less harmful than alcohol addiction or tobacco addiction.
Washtenaw County Health Department officials say, according to the most recent countywide health survey, 40% of Washtenaw County adults report trying marijuana, 12% report use within the last year. And among Washtenaw high school students, 22% report having tried marijuana, 13% report using it in the last month. But the Washtenaw County Health Department issued a statement for this report, saying it has no official position on the legalization of recreational marijuana, adding currently there are a lot of unknowns, research is limited, and at times inconclusive. One possible positive impact from legalized recreational marijuana use could be on Michigan's tourism industry. Dave Lorenz is the vice president of Pure Michigan.
I think overall, generally said, if the law goes into effect, we will see a slight increase for a while, but still, generally speaking, people will still come to Michigan for all the things we've been known for a long time. You know, fresh water everywhere, beautiful blue skies, comfortable four-season weather.
As far as the impact on tourism in Michigan, Lorenz says they welcome any and all types of businesses, but he's not sure how this is going to go.
It'll take us a while to figure out the pluses and the minuses with any kind of change in a policy this dramatic. So we'll see how it goes.
If Michigan voters approve recreational marijuana use on November 6, it will take effect and be legal 10 days after official declaration of election results. But it's likely you won't be able to buy marijuana in a retail establishment for 12 to 15 months as applications are accepted and processed. Michigan medical marijuana dispensaries already in business will be first in line for those licenses. And no matter what Michigan voters decide on November 6, Marijuana remains illegal on the federal level. I'm Lisa Berry.
Next, a clash over restrooms and rights leads to a school board recall vote in a small mid-Michigan town. We'll take you there. And later, we'll go one-on-one with all six Michigan gubernatorial candidates. You're listening to Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. Welcome back to Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. This weekend's edition is focused on the elections less than 2 weeks away. In mid-Michigan, one school board race has divided a community. Four of the seven members of the Williamston Board of Education could be recalled for their support of a controversial transgender student policy. WKAR education reporter Kevin Lavery talked with the board president and a person trying to replace him.
A year ago, political fireworks lit up the small town of Williamston, and ever since, a long, slow fuse has been burning toward the ballot box. Last November, the school board approved a pair of transgender student policies. One was about restroom accommodations, the other about gender identity. The package passed on a 6-1 vote. Board President Greg Talberg says it was the right thing to do.
We have a policy in place that our administration and staff can respond thoughtfully and consistently.
Now that vote could cost four incumbents their seats. Talberg and fellow board members Christopher Lewis, Nancy Deal, and Sarah Bellinger are facing a recall election. Here's what the district's gender identity policy says. Listen for two small but important words.
Williamston Community Schools shall accept the gender identity that each student asserts, reflecting the student's legitimately held belief, once the student and or his or her parent or guardian, as appropriate, notifies district administration that the student intends to assert a gender identity that differs from previous representations or records.
The key words here are and or.
The and or piece, absolutely, parents should have concerns about that.
Lori Jonacek is a parent in Williamston. She says the policy gives schools the latitude to decide not to notify parents about their child's chosen gender identity. Jonacek says that runs counter to Michigan statutes.
We've got a law that says the parents have the fundamental right to raise up their child and be in charge over the education.
Board supporters say there's no usurpation going on in Williamston.
The district in no way wants to nor can legally abrogate parent rights. They can't do that.
Nicole Ellefson has a transgender son who formerly attended the Williamston Public Schools. She insists there are valid reasons for an and/or clause. Ellefson notes that an 18-year-old high school senior is a legal adult. In other cases, a student may be an emancipated minor. And Ellefson says there's another reason.
Unfortunately, there are some families who, if their child came out as LGBTQ, would beat them, emotionally abuse them, or kick them out of the house.
School Board President Greg Talberg says the district is aware of that possibility. He says it was never their intention to withhold information from parents.
Parents will know what is happening with their students in our schools. We just have to make sure we do it in a way that the student's safety is our top concern.
But Lori Jonacek says this issue goes beyond parental rights. She questions why the school board ever felt it needed a separate policy just for transgender students. Jonacek says all students are protected under Williamston's 1997 Equal Education Opportunity Policy. She says the board was wrong to affirm any specific group of students, and she says it did so against popular will.
80-90% of the in-district parents, students, and community members said this is not something that is even necessary. And to ignore that and just champion a policy lets me and others know that there's something else that's going on.
Still, Nicole Ellefson defends the policy as a best practice. She believes the school board majority that voted for the transgender policies took a proactive step in the interest of every student.
So to throw out these people who have done hard work, who have done massive learning about so many different things, who are dedicated members of our community, I think would be a huge mistake.
As Election Day nears, a lawsuit filed against board members Talberg, Lewis, Deal, and Bellinger, as well as two former members, is pending in federal courts. For now, though, Board President Greg Talberg is focusing on campaigning. He says there are other matters to attend to in the Williamston Community Schools.
So most of our conversations, as we reach out to voters, is just describing how proud we are of our schools and how we want to keep the momentum going that we've built. So we're up for election, and we'll do our best to keep our seats and keep our district moving forward.
However, if Talberg and company should lose their seats, a recall will end their terms immediately. That question will be resolved on November 6th, exactly 1 year to the day since Williamston passed its transgender policies. In Williamston, Kevin Lavery, WKAR News.
Earlier this year, the U.S. Supreme Court punted on how to address the issue of partisan gerrymandering. That's the practice where the party in power draws political lines for its own benefit. This November, voters in four states will consider whether to take that power away from politicians, and that includes Michigan. As Capitol correspondent Shayna Roth reports, the energy powering Voters Not Politicians redistricting initiative is fueled by frustration with government as usual.
It starts with a Facebook post after the 2016 election.
I'd like to take on gerrymandering in Michigan. If you're interested in doing this as well, please let me know. Smiley face.
That's Katie Fahey, the organizer of Voters Not Politicians. She had put up a similar post years ago.
And nobody even liked it.
But this time, people were clicking the like button, and they actually wanted to help.
And then out here is where we have our printer. This is one of the fanciest printers that our campaign has.
Fahey is showing off Voters Not Politicians' newest field office. The redistricting initiative she launched has amassed hundreds of volunteers and raised more than $1 million in donations. And everything is donated, from old computers to the furniture, which has people's names taped to the bottom so that they can get their chairs and tables back.
I'm hoping to find a coffee maker that can be donated, but some food and stuff like that. And then
right now, lawmakers in power get together and draw the district lines before getting them approved by the governor. Michael Lee is senior redistricting counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law. He says Michigan's maps are among the most skewed in the country.
It's very clear that their number one goal, above protecting communities, ethnic, geographic, otherwise in Michigan, it's very clear that their number one goal was to maximize Republican political power.
Republicans have taken the majority of the state's congressional seats, 9 out of 14, even in years when Democrats have gotten far more votes overall. The redistricting proposal would create a commission made up of 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and 5 independents. A majority that includes a mix of all 3 would have to agree on the maps. But the opposition calls the proposal an expensive way to change a system that already works. Linda Lee Tarver is a Republican and has worked for 4 secretaries of state. She says this whole thing is skewed to help Democrats.
It's a gimmick, and it bypasses our elected official and our democracy. And if they want to have the pen, they need to win elections.
The initiative comes at a time when voters are frustrated with politics and government. Bernie Porn is president of Epic MRA, a polling and research firm.
It has been something that has been building for years.
He says that frustration came to a head in 2016.
People are dissatisfied. They think that government at the federal level is really looking out for members of Congress, their donors and corporations, and they're left out in the cold.
Polls looking at the redistricting proposal show it's been gaining popularity over the last few weeks, but it's still a difficult subject to get people excited about. Shakina Hanna of Detroit plans to vote in November, and she's leaning in favor of the proposal.
One reason is because why should the person in the office get to decide, like, who gets to vote in that area? Yeah. When I should have a right to choose, and then it just makes me wonder, well, how much rights do we really have?
Even if the redistricting measure passes, that's not the end of the road. Legal challenges to the commission's decisions seem all but certain. I'm Shayna Roth in Lansing.
Next, six candidates share their vision for improving Michigan.
Having auto insurance optional.
Just get people to sit down at the table and talk to one another.
State hospitals are state funded.
A teacher, no matter what grade level, receives a minimum of $60,000.
Rebuild with a better mix and material.
We can't continue to shrink and be less significant.
Our interviews are next on Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region.
The race for Michigan State Board of Trustees probably wasn't top of mind in past elections. But after Larry Nassar, resignations, and hearings on Capitol Hill, people are paying attention. I'm Morning Edition host Emily Fox. I talked with four people who want to help shape MSU's future. Before you make your choice, listen Wednesday and Thursday morning on 90.5 WKAR, your NPR station for the Capitol region.
Welcome back to Current State from WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. Our last segment is dedicated to a series of interviews with the candidates running to become Michigan's next governor. There are six people vying for the state's highest office on November 6th. Keith Butkovich is the nominee from the Natural Law Party of Michigan. He told WKAR's Kevin Lavery that one of the big issues he wants to fix in the state is the cost of car insurance.
One of them that's certainly up there is the car insurance rates. Michigan, if it's not the highest, it's certainly one of the highest in the nation. And there's a lot of things that I would try to do. One of them would be to eliminate some of the regulations that the insurance are forced to, the coverages they're forced to offer you. I think there should be just a base one. And then if you want more coverage, you should be able to do that. I would get rid of some of the medical because some of that's already covered. But something else I would do is actually, since I'm a big freedom guy, I would actually make having auto insurance optional. That would be where if you didn't have auto insurance and you got into an accident and it was your fault, well, then you'd have to pay. That'd be one of the chances you take. But it's a personal freedom issue and personal responsibility.
Water quality is a top concern in our state. We have not only lead and copper impacting the safety of our drinking water, now we have PFAS or PFAS. What would be your plan to make sure our drinking water is safe?
Well, part of it, we all know the Flint issue. I think the fact that the courts had Snyder and the other people were not allowed to be defendants, I think that's wrong. They should completely have to defend them. And if it is proven that they knew or they were involved, then they should be responsible and it should come out of their own pockets instead of the state. I know the water issue, I live on the east side of the state. I'm near Detroit, so we have a big issue with the Detroit River and Lake Erie. Especially down by the state line, they've had algae growth. That problem, part of it is it has to do with other states, and in this case, Ontario and Canada, because it's a border. But I just the only thing I worry about is if there's too much regulation. I worry that it would hurt business too much. But at the same time, I do want clean water, and anybody who does pollute it, or whether it's an industry or whether it's government, because government also has some of the pollution, I think that, yes, absolutely, they should be responsible and they should have to pay accordingly to fix the problem.
Let's switch over to education. More than half of our third graders are not reading proficiently at grade level. What's your plan for reversing that trend?
Well, part of the problem, I think, is federal. I think there's way too much federal. I'm not a fan of the Federal Department of Education at all. Unfortunately, that's above my as governor. One of the thing I really think that education is too bureaucratized. I think there's too much at the state level, and I really think the power should be at the local level, be it the county, be it a school district, or really be it the parents. And I think working more directly with the people in that community to come up with ideas and cost-saving ideas, you know, none of this, all this bureaucracy that we have, I think that would help the scores. And plus, reviewing the tests, too, to see how accurate they are.
Possibly changing the test?
It's a possibility, yes.
What's your vision for healthcare in Michigan?
I'm not a fan of government-involved healthcare. I think it will actually, I think that actually hurts the services, and I think the cost, in my opinion, go up. I really think that if you have some of the other issues with the taxes in general with business and people, there'd be more money available, and I think there would be more competition with healthcare, and that would bring costs down. I also think that people that cannot afford it, I really think that with more money available to some of these people with more money that they would donate, there'd either be whether it's a religious institution, whether it's a charity, nonprofit, some other thing. Because most people in Michigan are very generous. They're willing to help their fellow man and woman when they're needed.
So does that come across as more taxes then?
No.
And then how do we pay for that?
That's a hard issue, but I do think that less bureaucracy, I think there would be less charges for the hospitals. And I do think if people have more money by lowering taxes and costs in a lot of areas, that they would be able to contribute more to those who need it.
Keith Butkovich is running for governor in Michigan with the Natural Law Party. Mr. Butkovich, thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you.
In East Lansing, for WKAR News, I'm Kevin Lavery.
For the first time ever, Michiganders could choose someone from the Libertarian Party to be governor. Bill Gelineau is that candidate. For him, the largest issue looming over Michigan now is political discord.
I really think it comes down to lack of cooperation. You know, when I look at the two larger, older parties and the way they've sort of demonized each other, it really transcends down into all of the whole range of issues. If we can just get people to sit down at the table and talk to one another, that we could probably hammer out some of these issues.
One very specific problem we do have in Michigan is water quality. PFAS, lead, and copper in the water in some areas are affecting the quality of our drinking water, the safety. What do you plan to do as governor to make sure that our drinking water is safe?
My approach to how we would enforce and require corporations that are handling toxic substances and how we would address that, the most important of which is using an existing tax that's out there called the Industrial Facilities Tax, and we would apply that broadly to any company that would be handling these toxic substances. That really only generates the money to deal with the existing sites that we have, to deal with companies that are already out of business. As far as companies that are in operation, I want to make sure that they carry sufficient insurance so that if there's a problem, they can't walk away from it.
I'd like to ask you about education now. The state has a goal of becoming a top 10 education state, but right now we rank in the bottom 10 in terms of our reading and math scores. More than half of our third graders don't read proficiently at their grade level. What might you do as governor to reverse that trend?
Well, I'm opposed to Common Core and the testing regimen, which I think is really gives an incorrect assessment of what the situation is. And using averages is no way to treat an individual child. What I think we need to look at is the fact that in some school districts we're doing very, very well, and in others we're struggling. And I think it comes down to figuring out how to allocate resources. One of my big criticisms has been very large school districts in which children and parents are very often lost. Michigan has right now upwards of 460 or 470 school districts, including K through 8s and some other odd things. And Governor Snyder has actually advocated consolidation as a solution. And most people in the state don't know, but in 1920, we had 7,000 school districts. And parents were much more in charge. They were much smaller. There was a lot more sensitivity to individual issues. And I think we need to move in a direction where, rather than having these enormous school districts like Detroit Public Schools, Grand Rapids, and others, that we give parents much more opportunity for them to impact their individual children's lives. And that's really where the problem exists in my mind.
What's your vision for health care in Michigan?
I do support Governor Snyder's decision to expand the Medicaid coverage, but we also know that the actual cost of Medicaid is expanding exponentially, and it's going to become untenable. We proffered one pilot program to try to address long-term dependency in the welfare system, and we offered some incentives for young girls to contract with the approval of their parent or guardian to voluntarily enter a program to delay having children. And it created quite a firestorm. And I stand by that program. I still think it would be a wonderful opportunity for people to lift themselves out of poverty. Some other people might advocate doing something different. We know social science teaches us that the age that a woman has her first child is the strongest indicator as to whether or not she's going to be into welfare for a longer period of time. And so we thought that a voluntary program that would give her an opportunity to delay the having of that first child, to perhaps become more mature, to have the opportunity to go to college,
and to really set your course in life.
Bill Gelineau is the Libertarian Party candidate for Michigan governor. Mr. Gelineau, thanks so much for your time.
Glad I could be here. Thank you.
In East Lansing, for WKAR News, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Jennifer Curlin is hoping to become Michigan's first Green Party governor. She told WKAR's Kevin Lavery, water quality is the most pressing issue in Michigan now.
So I think the number one issue in the state of Michigan right now is Flint. The Flint water crisis is the canary in the coal mine for so many other issues in our state. When you talk about the issues of our water infrastructure crumbling and the attempted privatization of our water resources that is around our entire state, it's not just in Flint. You talk about lead poisoning and children. When you look at the actual list of cities and municipalities that have children with lead poisoning, that's documented. And I think it's really important when you talk about that to note that not all kids in Michigan are tested for lead poisoning. Only kids who are on public assistance are tested. 43% of the counties in our state have children with lead poisoning.
We're also seeing more reports of PFAS and copper in the water as well in various places.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do about that as governor?
We need to end pollution in our state. Businesses are allowed to continue to dump and pollute our waterways with no recourse. They don't have to hold an insurance policy to cover cleanup or issues. Hence, we still have a mess in the Kalamazoo River. And we have this issue kind of looming of Line 5 and Enbridge and what potentially that could do to our Great Lakes. We need to start holding these businesses accountable for the true cost of doing business. And that includes the health care of the people that they are making sick from their business. That means that they need to be paying for the cleanup. And when you actually start charging them the true cost of doing business, they're going to stop doing that kind of business. And that is how we can stop pollution in our state.
Let's go to a non-environmental issue, education. More than half of our third graders are not reading proficiently at grade level. Mm-hmm. What would you do as governor to try to reverse that trend?
So I currently serve on the Redford Union School Board. So the issue of public education is really important to me. Number one, I think we need to do a constitutional convention, and we need to completely revamp Proposal A. It has allowed our state to start taking general fund money that used to be earmarked towards public education and start giving it away to big corporations and tax breaks. We need to make sure that when we look at our funding for public education, that every single child gets the same dollar amount across our entire state. We need to earmark general fund money, make sure that it's going towards public education, and it can't be removed. And so we need to change that to make sure that we're also funding curriculum itself. I was speaking with some school kids from Detroit, and one of the young girls told me she's in calculus. They have 8 textbooks for calculus. And what those kids are doing is they're taking a photo of the pages of the book on their phones, and they're sharing it with all of the other students. And so they are learning calculus off of 8 books for 30 students on their phone. And that should be just horrific to everybody.
What's your vision for healthcare in Michigan?
It is certainly possible to do a single-payer system in Michigan. The problem is that the ideas that have been out there so far are talking about ridiculous changes that are going to need constitutional changes, changes on the federal level that are really never going to happen. But what we can do in Michigan is create a gap insurance. So we don't have to lose the federal funding that we're getting currently from Medicare or Medicaid. We need to find out exactly how much we need to increase the funding for my child to make sure that all children are covered. And then we need to look at how do we cover the rest of the populace? How do we remove the profit from healthcare? Make sure that state hospitals are state funded. And so as a state, we need to create our own gap insurance. And we need to cover everybody who's not covered. And we can do so with a separate state funded version of insurance and start removing that profit from our healthcare.
Jennifer Curland is the Green Party candidate for Michigan governor. Ms. Curland, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
In East Lansing for WKAR News, I'm Kevin Lavery.
If you're just joining us, we're listening to interviews with the 6 people vying to become the next Michigan governor. Todd Schleiger is running for the office with the U.S. Taxpayers Party. He told WKAR's Kevin Lavery roads are the most pressing issue facing Michigan today.
We have multiple issues here in Michigan. We have issues with our roads, which has been promised to be fixed for nearly 40 years, and they haven't done a thing towards that other than they figured out that our gas tax funds have been a lucrative fund for them to pilfer from. So my plan is to take that and actually use it what it was created for and actually fix our roads. Anytime they want more money from the people of Michigan, they say it's for our roads. So we actually need to spend the money that we actually get for our taxes and put it where it needs to go.
Water quality is absolutely a top concern in our state. We have PFAS, lead, and copper in some of the drinking water areas that's affecting the safety. What's your plan to make sure that Michigan water is safe to drink?
Well, we have a huge problem with our infrastructure. It's outdated, and we need to update it. Matter of fact, with the infrastructure program that I have in that I would put into place would create nearly 250,000 jobs. We have to replace water lines. We have to replace sewer lines. We need to get our electrical grid up to speed. We need to get a whole slew of things.
What would you do about protecting our water supply in the Great Lakes from illegal withdrawal by other states, which is protected by the Great Lakes Compact?
Well, the Great Lakes Compact is actually 8 governors, if I remember right. We need to work together in order to protect our Great Lakes. There's also talk about some pipeline going from Lake Michigan all the way down to Texas and Arkansas and all that. That will never happen in my administration. From my beliefs and understandings, we have 20% of the free water in the world, or I should say fresh water, not the free water. But either way, we need to protect that. I mean, we got endangered Asian carp species in there, or invasive species in there that we need to take care of. We need to get our system cleaned up. We need to provide fresh water for the state.
I'd like to ask you about education. Right now, more than half of our third graders are not reading proficiently at grade level. What would be your plan for reversing that trend?
Well, first off, we need to put more money into our classrooms. My budget is set up for $20 billion right off the get-go for our public school system. My program is set up to make sure that a teacher, no matter what grade level, receives a minimum of $60,000 because I believe it's all in our teachers' hands. I mean, these teachers, some of them are actually putting money out of their own checks for supplies for their kids. That should never happen. My budget has $1.2 billion set off to the side out of that $20 billion for bringing 2 years of community college within the public school realm. And that includes trade schools and vocational schools, like the media school Specs Howard would be a perfect example for that. We need to bring them in. It gives our kids an extra step up before the universities. But at the same time, we also have $1 billion set off to the side for special ed classes, which are our special education classes for some of our children that are being left behind because of disabilities.
What's your vision for healthcare in Michigan?
It's the state's responsibility in order to make healthcare affordable for the people of Michigan. The insurance industry as a whole, between auto insurance and health insurance, has been bleeding our families dry. My idea is to open up the Medicaid and make it affordable and force these third-party insurance companies to literally compete with the state. The people now are screaming about a single-payer system. Well, it isn't up to the federal government, or it shouldn't be up to the federal government to put a plan in place. It should be up to the states. The states have control over what's going on within their state.
Todd Schleicher is running for Michigan governor with the U.S. Taxpayers Party. Mr. Schleicher, thanks for having some time for me.
Thank you for having me.
In East Lansing, for WKAR News, I'm Kevin Lavery.
And we have a post note about that interview. Mr. Schleicher said that the state claims to receive about $2.5 billion from both the gasoline and diesel fuel taxes. He also said that the state actually receives more than $12 billion. We spoke with the state budget office, which tells us the projected gas and diesel tax revenue for fiscal year 2019 is only $1.45 billion. Let's continue our series of interviews with the candidates running to become Michigan's next governor with Democratic nominee Gretchen Whitmer. She is a former state senator and interim Ingham County prosecutor. In her interview with WKAR Morning Edition host Emily Fox, Whitmer said infrastructure is the biggest issue in Michigan right now.
Well, I think we've got a number of glaring issues we've got to confront as a state, but there's no question that our infrastructure is dangerously behind, whether it is drinking water into our communities and into our homes, or it is the roads that we're driving on. This is one of the fundamentals that we have not made the investments in and that we're all paying, whether you're paying to buy bottled water or you're paying to fix your tires or replace your windshields, we're all paying for this failure. And that's why
I'm leading on a real plan to fix our infrastructure here in Michigan.
And what does that plan look like? How do we get there?
It's built around a Rebuild Michigan Infrastructure Bank, and it is about rebuilding our roads with smarter so that when we dig up a road, we use the opportunity to lay conduit to get everyone connected to high-speed broadband, that we replace the water infrastructure that is bringing the water into our homes, and that we rebuild with a better mix and materials with warranties so our roads will be built to last and we can stop paying to fix the windshields because our roads are quality and safe.
And our tires, all those potholes?
Exactly.
Water is a big resource in our state. What are your thoughts on outside sources such as states or companies taking water from the Great Lakes and its basin?
You know, we are blessed with abundance, right? We are home to 21% of the world's fresh water within and around our borders. It is something that we've taken for granted as a state. We've permitted corporate threats. We've permitted outside threats to our water, and it is time to get a handle on it. And that's why I think we've got great research universities. We're sitting in the middle of one right now at MSU. Let's use the research universities, the water, and the brains of this state and become the place that people come to learn about stewardship of water. And we protect the water that we have. We shut down threats to our drinking water and we clean it up so every person in our state can confidently bathe their kids and give them a glass of water at the dinner table.
So let's say if California said, we're running out. Michigan, we want to tap your Great Lakes, you would be a part of the Great Lakes Compact where you would have a voice in deciding that. What would your stance be on something like that?
You know what? We've got a duty to protect our water, and I'm going to fiercely do that and work with Republicans and Democrats in all of the Great Lakes state to make sure that we are protecting our water through this Great Lakes Compact.
In your mind, what are the biggest issues facing education right now, and how do you plan to fix it?
Well, one of the reasons that Amazon did not locate their HQ2 here in Michigan, they cited talent and a concern about talent. And that's why the plan that I've put on the table starts with universal early childhood education and extends through making sure that you can get an affordable four-year degree or a debt-free two-year degree or a path into the skilled trades. Because there's not one path for everyone, but everyone in our state deserves a path, and it starts with skills. And that's what education is all about.
And where would the funding come from to make higher education less expensive, to fund early childhood development?
Well, these are the kinds of investments that have such a huge return. My opportunity scholarship, it's called My Opportunity Scholarship, a part of my economic plan. It only costs about $100 million. And I know to the average listener, that sounds like a big number, but in a budget that is about $56 billion, that's a small part of our resources that would make a massive improvement in all of our lives. It's the rising tide theory. When we have more people, a concentration of talent, everyone's lives are improved because the wages go up and we all benefit from that. And so closing this skills gap has got to be a priority. And when we do that, we all benefit.
What's your vision for healthcare in the state?
So I worked incredibly hard and crossed the aisle to work with Rick Snyder. You know, I was the Senate Democratic leader. He was the Republican governor. We didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. But when he embraced the Affordable Care Act and wanted to expand Medicaid here in Michigan, I crossed the aisle and negotiated and put the votes together, and we got it to his desk. And 680,000 people in our state got health care coverage, $2.3 billion of benefit to our economy, 30,000 jobs. This has been a good thing for Michigan. We're going to protect the work we did, but in a bipartisan manner, we're going to expand on it.
Gretchen Whitmer, Democratic candidate for governor, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Now to Republican gubernatorial nominee, Attorney General Bill Schuette. In a phone interview with WKAR Morning Edition host Emily Fox, Schuette said jobs is the biggest challenge our state faces.
Well, the most pressing problem facing Michigan right now is that we need to have more jobs and bigger paychecks. And Michigan needs to be a growth state and a paycheck state and a job state. I'm running for governor to grow our population.
And how do we get there?
Well, it's we need to make sure that people are in charge, and we encourage the private sector to grow jobs and maximize economic growth. And that means by cutting and eliminating the Granholm-Whitmer income tax increase that was supposed to have been temporary, but it's been lingering on now since 2007. And so that's number one. The second is we need to lower auto insurance rates. When we have the highest auto insurance rates in America, that has to change.
change. And we got to improve our schools and rebuild our roads and provide accessible health care for families across the state.
What is your vision for health care in the state?
Accessible and affordable health care is so important to every citizen of our state. And Healthy Michigan is the law. And we need to make sure we cover pre-existing conditions. I've always supported pre-existing condition coverage, voted for it 6 times in the state Senate. And I want to improve Healthy Michigan by having a Medicaid work requirement for able-bodied adults. That's how we make sure we have the resources to help those who are truly in need. And those who are able-bodied and able to work, well, we'd celebrate them being on an employer's health care program and have more jobs and a brighter future.
In your mind, what are the biggest issues facing education right now, and how do you plan to fix it?
Well, you know, my wife Cynthia and I attended public schools in Midland, and so did our daughter Heidi and son Bill. But today, Michigan's third grade reading score is among the lowest in the nation. So as governor, I'm going to grade our schools A through F, a report card for families so they can see which schools in their neighborhood or across the state are performing well and which are not. Second, provide grants as incentives for those schools and reward those schools who are showing improvement in terms of their test scores. And finally, have a literacy director in the governor's office as a member of the cabinet because of the significance of reading. When I'm governor, Michigan's children will read. We'll add a Michigan Reading Foundation to provide for transportation scholarships and hire literacy coaches and summer reading coaches. This issue of reading is so fundamental to Michigan's future. When I'm governor, Michigan's children will read.
Michigan has had issues with the safety of our drinking water, whether that be from lead, PFAS, or copper. What do you plan to do to make sure water is safe to drink here in Michigan?
Our state government needs to provide help to those communities that have a PFAS problem, whether that's in Alpena, whether that's in north of Grand Rapids, Rockford, or near Kalamazoo in Parchment. And the fact is we need to provide safe drinking water sources, do the cleanup, work with the federal government. And as governor, I'll work side by side with the leaders in the federal government and the DEQ to make sure we have clean, safe drinking water for citizens of this state.
And do you think we have the funds to make that happen?
Well, you know, this is a significant issue. We just have to make it done, and we're going to get it done and provide safe drinking water. I mean, that's there's no other way. I mean, listen, I've experienced Flint, and, you know, I've led the fight to provide accountability in Flint. And it's the same, with the same drive, the same passion, the same earnestness that I had this investigation on the Flint water crisis, the same sense of responsibility I'll tackle the issue of PFAS.
Water is a big resource in our state. What are your thoughts on outside sources withdrawing water from the Great Lakes and its basin?
I've been a leader in opposing water diversion of the Great Lakes and all the straddling counties. And this goes back to this issue of Michigan growing. We can't be a smaller, shrinking state. There'll be 13 members of Congress after the next census. We once had 19 members of Congress. That means we're a smaller state. We can't continue to shrink and be less significant because our resources will be at risk if we have fewer members of Congress. Other states are growing faster than we are. And who's going to want that water? Emily, you know it. It'll be the West and the South.
Oh, yeah.
Where they have growing populations. That's one of these issues. Why I'm running for governor, to grow our state's population. Let's grow our state by cutting taxes, lowering auto insurance rates, but we need to be competitive in terms of jobs, economic growth, and that's key to our state's future, and it will protect diversion of Great Lakes water.
I've been speaking with Michigan Attorney General and Republican gubernatorial candidate Bill Schuette. Thank you so much.
Hey, great being with you. Have a good day.
You can listen to all of our interviews with Michigan's candidates for governor again at WKAR.org. Search Election 2018 to see all of our election coverage. And we invite you to check us out after you vote on November 6th. Starting at 8 p.m., we will bring you live updates on FM 105.1 WKAR News Talk and up-to-the-minute election results on WKAR.org. Well, that's all for this weekend's Current State. I'm Reginald Hardwick, WKAR Digital News Director. For the entire team, thank you for listening. We'll connect with you again next weekend.
The race for Michigan State Board of Trustees probably wasn't top of mind in past elections. But after Larry Nassar, resignations, and hearings on Capitol Hill, people are paying attention. I'm Morning Edition host Emily Fox. I talked with four people who want to help shape MSU's future. Before you make your choice, listen Wednesday and Thursday morning on 90.5 WKAR, your NPR station for the Capital Region.